Well, that's exactly what the Raiders have been doing, and that's just winning. And last night, the same thing. And, I mean, gosh, is Link still alive? Link, did you survive Mexico City, buddy?
I did. I'm here to speak on it.
Because, you know, I saw you put out on Twitter last night. You were having a nice fat stogie at the end of the game.
Victory cigar. Celebrate. Yeah,
and that, and you've had a lot of those this year.
There's been quite a few. I got to restock if the Raiders keep this up. But. Hey, guys, how's it going? Doug, how are you guys tonight?
Oh, yeah. Estadio Azteca.
How was the experience? You know, forget about just the game for a minute. What was it like being down there for a regular season game?
It was. I think the Mexican people did very well by us. They rolled out the red carpet, and I think the way the Raiders handled it, the Raiders and the Texans both did the same thing. They were there for the max of 24 hours. I think it was the best thing to do. You know, the truth of the matter is that security was an issue. It was at the utmost importance. They had us staying in the larger hotels down there by all the embassies and down by the president's home of Mexico. So they did what they needed to do to protect us. But logistically, if we had had more time, it could have been a nightmare because, you know, guys will want to go out and do things. And you can imagine if you have, 53 players, maybe 20 coaches, you know, then you talk about the staff and the guests. Logistically trying to provide security for all those people to go do different things would have been a nightmare. So the maximum getting in, 24 hours getting out. The stadium was beautiful. I think they did a good job with the stadium. They retrofitted from the last time I played there and even the time when we went down there in the draft and watched a soccer match in the stadium. It looked nice. We had their issues like with the laser pointer and the stuff coming down, the debris coming down from the from the stands after they did the halftime show using the cards, like people making paper
Heineken
airplanes
light,
trying
like-
to fly them. I mean, you had those things. But overall, I thought it was a good time.
Man, someone just happened in my ear. I'm sorry. You know what, though, Link? You're going to hear this from me today.
You want to talk about kickers?
You darn right, Lincoln
Why?
Kennedy.
Doug.
Come on.
Wait, we're better than this.
Not today, Lincoln.
Come on. It's kickers.
Missing 12. Talk to me, man. What's up? You got to, if they're going to be part of the team, Link, you got to put some respect on their name. Maybe not.
You know what? No. That's supposed to miss the special extra point. Yeah. Here's the thing. This is what I felt for quite some time. I've talked to Nape about it too when we've done shows in the past. I honestly believe the NFL is trying to get rid of kicking.
Ooh.
Now, follow me along. You don't do something that drastic or that dramatic overnight.
Right.
But look at what they're trying to set up. They're trying to make the extra point more challenging. They're trying to make they want to make kickoffs irrelevant and non-existent. They want to just take the ball at the 20 or the 25 and just go with it, you know, just line up and go with that. But they also know that it's a big part of the excitement in the game. The special teams is a big part of the game. But they also know from a security – I mean, not security, from a health standpoint that some of the most violent collisions happen on the kicking game. But to your point, when it comes to the extra points – this is what they wanted when they first moved it back. They wanted it to be challenging. They don't want it to be so normal. And this is their words. I didn't have a problem with it. If it's not broken, don't fix it.
Right.
But they wanted it to. They wanted the coaches to even think about or trying to go for two to make it more interesting. And now you've seen a number of kickers who are struggling with extra points. So go figure. I don't have a reason for that. But it's not a gimme now the way they backed it up.
Lincoln Kennedy on the Nation. Link, I thought the game last night was the worst officiated game I've seen this year, and unfortunately, fans across the NFL are saying that on a too much of a basis. But this is a repetitive pattern for the Raiders. They just are finding ways to win. Last night was not pretty. I mean, you could make the case that they were outplayed, but the reality is when they had to make plays, they made plays, and they have been finding ways to win.
There's no case about it. They were outplayed. I said it on the air. It was the strangest game I had ever seen. I do not recall a team being dominated in two out of the three phases for three quarters and one, finding a way to tie it up, two, finding a way to win. It just doesn't happen. It's a rarity. But, you know, you capitalize on the missed calls, which I agree with you. There was a number of missed calls. DeAndre Hopkins did not step out of bounds in the first quarter. The third down and one and fourth down and one, I thought they got it. I thought it was a poor spot.
The third down was the worst.
Exactly. Yeah. But you know what? The truth of the matter is that, you know, when you come back to it, O'Brien had no reason to go for, he should have kicked the field goal. Your team was doing well. They were slowing the Raiders down. Put the pressure on them. Take the points. Kick the field goal. Don't go for it on 4th and inches. Because if you come up and you get the ball back to the Raiders now, you know, Papa had said on a broadcast that he thought that, Brian was trying to keep the ball away from the Raiders, the potency of their offense. Well, they hadn't been potent all night. So I thought it was kind of a mute point. The Raiders were bailed out by pass interference calls. And then, of course, as critical as I can be of a winning team, I was most disappointed in the cutesy play calling that they had throughout the game. I just thought it was unnecessary. But, you know, when it's all said and done, a win is a win.
Cutesy. Ooh, Link. I hear you, man.
I'm going to walk at the source.
I got you.
Beautiful.
When you look at drop passes, Seth 2, Crabtree 4, this is would you call a little uncharacteristic? Was it something down there, or is this something that we just got to shore up?
No, I mean, it's something you got to shore up, and it's not characteristic by any means. Most of the receiving core for the Raiders have been sure-handed throughout this year, and that's mainly because of the accuracy of Derek Carr.
Right.
So it was one of those things where, you saw the pattern. The same pattern happened in the Kansas City game, and the Raiders didn't win with Crabtree dropping passes and people just not being able to hold on to the rock. But, you know, they were able to make enough plays in this game to win, so you'll take it because now you're 8-2 and you create a little separation between Kansas City, who dropped the game. But it's one of those things where there are a number of catches that I saw just hit, receivers like Crabtree and Roberts right in both hands and was dropped.
We're talking with Lincoln Kennedy. This is The Nation. If you want to call the show, you can at 339-1140.
Just don't call and talk about kickers.
No kickers.
I apologize.
Kicker question out and we're done with it.
No, we can't do that. Absolutely. We ought to have, Link, we ought to have a fine system here.
I agree. Just put up a jar in the studio, and every time you ask an inappropriate question about kickers or why a pro can't make free throws or something like that, you got to put a dollar in.
Absolutely.
It.
I'm with you.
Amen to that. You know, it's a good thing that Dwight Howard doesn't play in Sacramento. We'd be talking about missed free throws. We'd have a lot of money in that jar. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
We'd have a hell of a time, though, Link. We'd have a hell of a time with the money. Hey,
well, you know I'm all for that.
Amen.
Party on.
Hey, Link, how did the Raiders – we saw, and again, you walked on the field and you know it, but, boy, just watching on TV, all the guys, the footing, and we saw guys changing their cleats. How bad was that playing surface?
You know what? In all honesty, when I walked on the surface – I honestly thought that the field was in better shape than places like Tampa Bay and Jacksonville. Mm. And the reason why is that the turf was much thicker. First of all, it's a soccer-style stadium, so there's not a big crown. What I mean, that's what for most people, there's a big crown on football stadium, so the water can drain off to the sides. Soccer stadium is a little bit more flat. But they had, instead of mixing the dirt and the sod, they had the sort of rubber, and I thought it was a good surface. But I also figured because, there's a little slight difference between, say, football cleats and soccer cleats. Some of the football cleats, some of the standard sharks that the guys were using weren't giving the amount of traction they expected. So you saw a lot of guys slipping down that had to make some sort of adjustments.
You know, Link, with the exception, I mean, there were some points in the game, but what can you say about the ability for the Raiders to 4 minutes to hold the ball and be able to close it out the way that they did?
That's what you're supposed to do, bro. I mean, the truth of the matter is that, and when it comes to the latter part of the year when the weather gets worse, you're not going to be just able to throw it and
right.
in and out. You're going to have to run it. And we call those offenses like 4-minute offenses to close out the game. You get a couple of first downs, force the opposing team to burn their timeouts and use the 2-minute warning. Mm-hmm. Game's over.
Yes.
You can't stop it. And that is when you put it in the hands of your big boys up front. Now, I was a little disappointed earlier in the game when the Raiders had a first down on the 2-yard line.
Mm-hmm.
The one run, Kirkland got stuffed by Clowney couldn't get it, got a no gain. But then they wanted to go with 2 cutesy passes, which I just didn't agree with. And there were a lot of offensive linemen that were upset. Look, these guys, the thing is, Doug, is that when you put it on a guy's shoulders.
Right.
Like for me, I remember I would look at Callahan and Gruden odd if it came up 3rd down and short or, you know, 3rd down and 2 or whatever, and we needed the yards, and they weren't calling my number. They weren't going my way. I'm like, what's wrong with you? Did
right.
I do something wrong? Did I kick your dog? Did I talk about your mom? Did I do something? Because that's right. what I expected. And I think these guys, especially after that Denver game, this offensive line expects that. Now, everything's not going to go as planned. I mean, those guys get paid too, so you're going to have to give credit to the other team when they deserve it.
Yes.
But to give your guys a chance to put it in your hands. Now, you saw the Raiders do it end of the game as you talked about that fourth drive and that fourth quarter and that fourth, most notably, that fourth down and short when they decided to go for it in midfield when some people thought they should punt and, you know, make them play the distance.
Yeah.
You saw them put it in the hands of the big guys, and that's what you're supposed to do. That builds confidence. That makes those big guys up front feel better about themselves.
Yeah. We're talking with Lincoln Kennedy, the Nation. If you want to call, you've got the numbers. Link, at what point during the game were you aware of the laser issue?
What was it? Was it the first quarter?
Gotcha. So you knew, I mean, did you know because you saw it?
Yeah,
or you
I saw it. No, I saw it. I saw it on the field. At first I thought it was, I thought it was like they were preparing for the halftime show. I can't remember when it was, but I just thought it was like some graphic on the, on
gotcha.
The field, right? Because you saw, I saw a long, long green laser hit the field.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, so they're playing, maybe they're preparing for something. But then the very next play after that, Brock Osweiler went for a pass, and the laser was climbing up his body. So then I said, somebody's got a laser pointer in the stadium. The very next play, the laser made it to his face as he was throwing the ball.
Yeah.
So then we saw it. Then we reported because we reported to security because, one, you know, you don't want nobody to get hurt. You don't want nobody to get injured or anything like that. But more importantly, what if it was going to work against the Raiders? So I called upstairs. I told him about it, and we told security, and everybody started looking for it. But the only problem with those laser pointers is you can't see them until they're actually pointed on you.
Right.
You can't make it, you know, or they're pointed on you. It's hard to follow the line. So there was so much flash photography going on because it was a night game, and everybody wanted to show, you know, whether it was cell phones or cameras, whatever else it is. It's a lot more liberal than it is in the States as far as what they are allowed to bring in. That was, I don't know if they ever found it, to be honest with you. It didn't happen after halftime, but I don't know if they ever found it.
You spent the night there, correct?
The night before. Last night we came back after the game. We got back into the States about 5 in the morning.
Okay, so you flew with the team. So yeah. I guess the point is you would have had a police escort to the airport. But yeah. When I was there last December, I was telling Doug, I've never seen traffic like in Mexico City before. I mean, like, I know, was it with the police escort? Was it no problem?
We lucked out. First of all, it doesn't matter. It's worse than Los Angeles. But, of course, you got to remember, we're talking about 21, 22 million people
per
capita.
Yeah, right. Yep.
I mean, you're talking the equivalent of 3 New Yorks.
Right.
You know, how many Los Angeles is, you know what I mean?
No, you're right. Absolutely.
So it's going to be traffic. But we lucked out because yesterday was the recognized holiday of the Mexican Revolution. So it was a national holiday. So there wasn't as much traffic. Now, we had a full-on police escort, more than I have ever seen a police escort. We had like 5 or 6 buses, and I swear we had to have at least 20 motorcycles.
That's incredible.
And about, you know, about half that many as cars. I mean, we had it was a well-armed escort.
Yeah.
The traffic was always something there. And it took us, we left the hotel at 4, and I think it took us a good hour to get over with an escort to get to the stadium.
That's unbelievable.
And then of course, when we went to the airport, we flew out of Toluca Airport, which was about 2 hours outside of town. So it took us, you know, that much time to get from after the game over to the airport.
Whoa. You flew at an airport that was 2 hours away?
Yes.
So when you flew did you fly into that airport?
I flew in commercial because I went down a day ahead to do something with NFL International.
Oh, okay.
But when they did come in, they came in. Both teams came into the same. It's a private airport in Toluca, which is a neighboring city to Mexico City. It's just over the mountains. It's about 2 hours away from Mexico City. But it was a private airport. And the reason why they did that is because the customs process is easier out of a private airport than a commercial.
Oh, you know what? That's very true. Yeah. I was telling Doug, when we were there last December to play the Celtics, we stayed at the St. Regis.
Nice hotel.
Yeah, it's very nice. Yeah. NBA.
Yeah. Big time. I know. I saw the leather seats on the plane. Yeah, big time. Yeah.
And it was 7 miles to the arena.
Oh, yeah?
And it took an hour to go 7 miles.
Yeah. It's thick. Like I said, we were bailed out by holiday. There was no doubt.
That's good.
And of course, the NFL had their own little thing, NFL International. So they did a big fan fest the week before with a bunch of notable Hall of Famers and stuff like that. So it was a good time.
Well, that's good. Lincoln Kennedy, we're talking about the game last night. All right. So listen, you said it. I said it. Anyone that watched the game knows the Raiders, they were very fortunate to win that game last night. And you and I and Doug, we've been talking about this year. Yeah, 8-2 is great. 8-2 is great. But I keep on going to that defense. And, yeah, it was great against Denver, and I love the way they ran the ball against Denver. But you know what, Link? Even though the Raiders are 8-2, there were a lot of times this year when you have come on and we've talked about, they got to get better here, they got to get better there. That wasn't that impressive. So here we are, 10 games into the season. Give me your overall assessment of where they are right now.
As far as a grade defense-wise?
Yeah, well, just like, are you should Raider fans the record is great. I get that, but should they be concerned at all with how they're playing some of these games?
Absolutely. I mean, it's still single game elimination. And when you think about it, I mean, they beat Denver. But other than that, let's call it as a whole. Who have they beaten?
Nobody.
You see, my point is that I believe in this team. So don't get me wrong. Let me preface this into everyone's listening. I believe in this team. But I also believe in this team as a wild card caliber team. And what I mean by that is I'm not ready to just concede the division because they haven't shown me that they can consistently beat the Denvers, the Kansas Cities, the San Diegos like they have to. Now, they've already beaten Denver once. They've already beaten San Diego once. They lost to Kansas City at home. But in the month of December, they got to go on the road to these three places.
Yep.
And it's not going to be an easy game. And when you talk about football, you're talking about single game elimination. So I honestly don't think that they could have beaten any of those three teams the way they played last night. Now, Houston is notoriously bad in the fourth quarter.
Yes.
The Raiders are good in the fourth quarter. So that definitely benefited the Raiders in that instance. But, you know, I've scratched my head at some of the plays that they continue to give up because they've been out-coached, they've been out-schemed. You look at what Houston came in last night, and they wanted to throw to the tight end because they knew they had a mismatch against tight end against linebacker or tight end against safety. And that's why they went to him so frequently. And it almost became normalcy for Osweiler to back up and wait for the tight end to come out of his break before he threw it to him because he knew he was going to catch it.
You know, interesting enough, Link, you mentioned they got six games left, and three of them are divisional, and you obviously know that. I guess what really is going to – you're looking at a Panthers team that you know, they hadn't played well, and they're kind of maybe turning a Bills team that can be dangerous, and then a Colts team that's just – you don't know what you're going to get with those. So are with those three games, maybe kind of – you got the divisional. You know that those are going to be what they are. These three, though, could those be the deciding factor for the Raiders?
Well, without a doubt, because you're talking about positioning yourself in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
You'd much rather – well, I mean, I kind of say this hesitantly because
right.
I think the Raiders might prefer to go on the road than play at home. They seem to play better
right.
on the road.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yes. Sure.
But typically, you want to be at home. You want to be able to host these playoffs games. Typically, that's what you want. So that's why positioning power becomes. So as you mentioned, Doug, the division is what it is. But these other games, they decide where you're placed at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you win these games. If the Raiders are fortunate enough to, let's just say it, call it like it is. If they're fortunate enough to win all six of these games and go 14-2, they're going to be the AFC West or AFC leader, depending on how New England does, because it's the only one
right.
that's come to mind power wise. But, you know, trying to be a one or two seed to host throughout the playoffs.
Lincoln Kennedy
yeah.
talking to us on The Nation. Again, if you want to text in, you can at 44-1140. If you want to call 339-1140, 800-920-1140. We make our weekly transition quickly to the Dogs. You experienced that rivalry with Washington State. You guys were really
many times.
Good.
Many times.
What's the atmosphere
yeah.
like in Pullman when you get to a game? They're playing on the road. They got to win this, obviously, to keep their hopes alive. What's that atmosphere like?
Well, it's going to be crazy. It's going to be loud because Wazoo's in it, and there's nothing more than the Cougs would like to do to be able to take a chance to knock off the Huskies from whatever aspirations they are. And I played in this rivalry through college, and I tell you what, you know, I was talking with a reporter earlier, and he was like, well, you know, how into it were you? And I said, well, as a Southern California kid, this rivalry really never resonated as much with me as it did with other people who are from the Pacific Northwest who took it personal.
Sure.
Yeah.
As a Southern California kid, I took on the Southern California rivalries, the SCs, the UCLAs, as well as the, the Californians and the Stanfords. I took on those because I knew all those guys. I played in high school or played with them. You know, I knew all those guys. So, but I kind of took for granted that we were better than Wazoo. Like most schools that share a state or share a similarity, you know, you have your sort of snobbiness feeling. You know, we make jokes about it, like when Vanderbilt plays Tennessee, that's all right, that's okay, you'll be working for us one day. You know, those types of things. And we even talked about it in the Pac-12 offices when you watch Stanford and Cal were playing against each other. It's like, you could probably make that joke, but then you're looking at it, wait a minute, Cal's not bad, scholastically, You know, careful what you wish for. But anyways, the smart kids playing against one another. So, you know, we used to say that back in the day when, you know, people went to Wazoo or so, were bad because they couldn't get into UW, and that's why they hated us so much. But this is going to come down to the wire to me, guys, because this was one I had circled, as I mentioned, very early on my calendar. All right. Wazoo's got a run game.
All right, we're going to take the break. By the way, for you hockey fans out there, the name of the expansion team in Las Vegas, the Golden Knights. And if you're wondering, now, how did they choose that name? The billionaire owner, William Foley, went to West Point. There you go.
You know what I say?
What?
Pot Van sucks!
We'll be right back. The Nation here on Sports 1140. Back with The Nation, Grant Napier. Lake, I'm sorry, but we're watching hockey fights from my roommate in college, who is the general manager of the new Las Vegas team. And he was one of the best fighters of his time. And so I went back and looked at, we got videos from the 80s of him just destroying everybody he fought, nice. You know?
George nice. McPhee.
That's right. Yeah, but you're not allowed to fight in football, man. You get kicked out of the game.
Yeah, I know. That's just overrated.
Which is good, Link. You know, you didn't need to be doing that stuff.
Why not? They got to vent someone.
You know?
Well, unless there's a fumble, there's some things going on underneath there. I'm just saying, probably.
Hey, you know what, Link? It's good. Can you imagine, Link, you being a right tackle, and if Conrad Dobler was your right guard back in that era? I mean, that would have been something, you know?
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. We would have, it would have been some good times.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, Link, again, we've gone over the schedule, and before we start talking about this week, any issues health-wise, injury-wise last night that surfaced?
No. Pretty fortunate to come out. The case that you're going to have here is just like a Sunday to Thursday night game. You're going to have to rebound quickly and get ready. And what throws an extra wrench in it, if you will, is the holiday. Because most of the time Thanksgiving came around, you went to the office in the morning and then you broke, you know, and had Thanksgiving dinner, and then you came back and tried to have a light practice Friday.
Right.
But with the way the travel is, like I mentioned, we got into town, we landed, I flew back home with the team, we landed in Oakland at 5:30, got through customs. It was around 6 a.m. And so this is their day off. They didn't have to go to the office according to schedule for anything, unless treatment.
You
need treatment. And then tomorrow they'll probably have I would think if anything, it'd just be a way to get the juices going, like almost like a walkthrough or a jog through. You know, wouldn't be anything of a practice. This week they'll be doing more meeting than they'll be doing practicing to try to rebound and recover before the Carolina game.
So, Link, this was almost worse than playing a Monday night game on the East Coast, right?
Yeah. Well, just about. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because that's about 4.5-hour flight? Is that what?
Yeah, it was 4.5-hour flight.
Yep.
And
a two-hour drive.
And a two-hour drive, of course. Yeah.
So I still don't know, but whatever. So it is what it is. Yeah.
But, you know, in all honesty, they were trying to find the utmost convenience. And as I said, as far as the two-hour drive, you know, you come from the stadium, you have to drive over to another city that has a private airport because customs a little lax.
Yep.
I'll tell you this, guys. When I went down, I traveled commercially the Sunday that had Saturday Night Football, college football, and then Sunday I flew down the red eye 2 hours. I got down and landed at 8:15 local time in Mexico City. It took me 2 hours to get through customs.
Yeah.
Oof. With nothing, and that's just at the airport. So I can imagine if you had over 120 people, how long that would take.
Wow.
You know what I mean? So it was. I think they did it. They did as well as you possibly could with the circumstances.
Link, Sean Smith, Rodney Hudson, Osimile, Nelson, Irvin, Smith. Can you just talk a little bit about Reggie McKenzie and what he's done? I mean, I'm sure we're probably going to be talking maybe executive of the year.
He could be up there.
Yeah.
He definitely could be up there for what he's done and put things together. You know, what I appreciate about Reggie the most is that he wasn't one of these general managers who had a wheelbarrow full of money and just threw it at the most notable free agent.
Right.
He went out there and he was selective in his process, and more importantly, with the contracts that he gave them, he really made them earn it. It wasn't just, I'm going to hold all what you see so often in free agency world, as you know, Doug. And on top of that, what he's been able to establish with the foundation. Now, the foundation of this team is the Derek Carrs, the Khalil Max, the Amari Coopers, those guys. That's the foundation, the great Gabe Jacksons. Those are the Latavius Murrays. That's the foundation. That's the foundation to move for him. And because of the way he's drafted and the way things fell in place, you take most notably the two that came out at the same time, Khalil Mack and Derek Carr. Well, because Derek Carr wasn't a first-round pick, you know, next year they're going to offer him big money because obviously they're not going to allow him to go in the free agent market.
Right.
So they're going to offer him that big money. But if they once they do that and they solidify that contract, they can work on Khalil Mack's contract after that because he'll be come up, right? Mm. And then after that, you'll have Amari Cooper's come up. So your foundation remains consistent without great disruption or losing it to the market.
Right.
You see, that's where the true, you know, the genius comes into play.
And one of our one of our favorites is Jalen Richard. Finding little, you know, not little, I mean, in stature, but talent like that, that is, you see how it's added to the team.
Without a doubt. And last night was one of the first times I've been waiting for it all year. When they got Jalen Richard and DeAndre Washington, I saw what these guys could do in practice. They brought a different aspect that the Raiders hadn't had to their offensive arsenal for quite some time. A back that can run routes and catch out of the backfield. And last night against McKinney from Houston Texans, they worked it to a T because he's notoriously known not being able to cover in space, and he had problems with it. And so they were able to exploit it. I wish they'd do more of it, but we saw it happen last night.
You know, you're taking on a Carolina team, and I think one of the very best players in all of football, Luke Kuechly, and the concussion, and they're saying they'd be very surprised if he plays. That is a big loss on that defense because Link. I mean, the guy does everything.
Without a doubt.
And then their center, Ryan Khalil, looks like he's not going to play. And so, hey, you're getting to this time of year, man. It's Thanksgiving. Guys are banged up. But these concussions, we saw Luke Kuechly in the way he left the field, Lincoln. I'm sure you saw the video of that. That looks scary.
It does, and this is the thing that strikes me as odd, Nape, and I would go to you because you follow the Raiders a lot more as a fan and, of course, person to be in the market than I was paying attention to. Have you ever seen the stars align quite like they have for the Raiders this year?
You know,
think
what?
About it.
Lincoln, I have not. I really haven't. And Doug and I were talking about this, when we first came on, about how, you know, every bounce of the ball, every call, it's just like, it's almost like the stars are aligned for the Raiders. Because, Link, again, I'm not trying to be negative here, but this team shouldn't be 8-2 right now.
I agree.
You know?
I agree. And, and that's why I said, I mean, we call it like we see it. We're going to be practical and realistic. I know there's probably a lot of fans that say, stop being Donnie Downer, but I'm not being Donnie Downer. I'm telling you what's probably going to happen when you go up against a good team if you don't find a way to correct it.
Yep.
But my thing is this, is that I think back to, I can't necessarily say luck because it was playing, but the time that we had the window, the Raiders haven't had a record this well since I was playing in 2001. And so, I didn't necessarily think the stars aligned. I just thought we were beating up people.
Right.
And I could say that to some effect what the Raiders did to Denver. They beat them up. But they barely got away with a win in Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
You know, Jacksonville wasn't very good. So you don't know how much you can take that accord. I think they were lucky and fortunate enough to get away with a win in New Orleans. You could say the same thing about Tennessee. I mean, these
Baltimore.
Baltimore, I mean, these things come up. So the stars have definitely aligned.
But you know what?
Calls and everything else.
And let's talk about this when we come back. But I also want to, and Link, let's do this when we come back. I want to talk about what the expectations were for this year and where this team is, and then we'll use that in the next segment right here on The Nation on Sports 1140. Grant Napier, Doug Christie, Link. All right, so Link, we were saying, I go back to the beginning of this year and I think about, okay, what were fans hoping for? They were hoping for a team that could compete for the playoffs. I don't think anyone, yourself included, me, anyone else, thought that the Raiders would be 8-2.
No.
Here's my take on the situation. I think the Raiders, barring an injury to Derek Carr, okay, at the very least, will go 3-3 in their next six. So I think that at the very least, they're going to win 11 games this year, and they're going to be, again, barring an injury to Carr. Now, you've played in the game, you're probably telling me shut up because you know that how quickly things can change in the NFL.
I think that's a reasonable explanation because you also take in consideration the level of talent that you're going to play in the next six games.
So, to me, even if the Raiders were to go 11-5, and which is great, and even if they ended up losing their first playoff game, I would look back at this as an overwhelming success for this franchise, where they were, where they've been. Derek Carr in his third year, Reggie getting everything. And because to me, I think you got to experience all of that first. So to me, I'm looking at the big picture, and I think that the big picture is so bright for this franchise right now that even if they make the playoffs, which I think they will, and if they should lose their first game in the playoffs, I would still look at this as an overwhelmingly successful season.
Well, it's a successful season if they make the playoffs, because they haven't been there for, what, a decade and some change? Am I right?
You were there the last time they made the playoffs.
Yeah, well, okay, so it was.
I mean, it was the Super Bowl. It was the Super Bowl year.
So that's that. It would definitely be a success. I think coming into the season, I think my projected record was like 9-7, wild card, 10-6, 9-7. That's where I kind of put them. So if they're able to get double digit wins, there's no doubt it's a success. It's most of the success they've had in a while. But so it is. That's realistic.
And here's the other issue. And you brought up your team. You know, to me, when you played in that Super Bowl year, I thought your team was basically a very good to a great team. Baltimore was a great team. The level of competition to me when you played, when you guys were good, they were more, in my opinion, more formidable, really good teams. This may sound crazy here. I don't even think the game would be competitive if your team could match up with this year's Raiders team. I mean, but that's not the point. The point is that this Raiders team this year, to me, is going to end up overachieving than we thought they would.
Well, and I think that's practical and realistic. The thing is that if the Raiders make the playoff, it's a success. The thing they have to remember is they have to maximize the window and the window of opportunity. And what I mean by that is they're only going to be able to keep this team together, this team that you see on the field, together as a team as a whole for another 2-3 years. And within that, they're going to lose. There's going to be somebody that's going to go to attrition. It always happens when you have good teams. You look at free agency, there's always somebody jump ship that's going to change the chemistry of the team somewhere, or there's going to be a turnover. So they've got to maximize it. But they've also, as you mentioned, and I agree, they have to experience that level of disappointment. Keep that hunger in their soul. I want to be, you know, oh, man, we let that one get away. We could beat those guys. Those guys are Super Bowl champs. That's what you got to see. And that's what we did. We went through it in 2000. We played the Baltimore, hosted the AFC Championship game, which I didn't think that we were that good. We hosted the AFC Championship game, got beat by the Baltimore Ravens at home, and then they went on and won the Super Bowl. And now we're thinking to ourselves, wait a minute, we do have a good damn team. And that's when we went on that tear for the next 2 years.
Hey, Link, get some sleep, buddy.
I will. I'm on my way, brother.
All right, you take care.
I'll see you guys soon.
That's The Nation. Doug and I tomorrow, 3 o'clock. I will be hosting the Jim Rome Show tomorrow at 9. Make it a great evening, everybody, and thanks for listening to the Grant and the Appiah Show with Doug Christie.